Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 79. I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
I'm Dan. I'm visiting. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dan. This will either be the best show or the worst show. For the record, Dan is waving at me inaudibly, which is pretty hard to not do, I believe.
Is there a way? Let me see if I can.
You slap your fingers together like you're like slapping your thighs together.
See, I can't do that.
Smack, smack, smack. So this will be either be the most bizarre episode ever or the funnest. I haven't figured it out yet. I had 1 hour of sleep last night, went to work, 16-hour day, going to work tomorrow in less than 6 hours. I have to leave.
Super cool.
Yeah, it's fun time.
Hey, so, have you checked our email?
Yeah, nothing new.
Oh, okay.
I will say, though.
We did a contest last week.
Ah.
Yeah, nothing there. Surprise, surprise. So this episode, we were supposed to discuss Dead Poets Society. Speaking of emails, it was our first emailed submission movie to watch.
Oh, cool.
We are going to watch it next week, kind of break the trend a little bit and talk about a film during the topic episode. And Tim wanted to bring up a film called Loving Vincent.
Mm.
And that film is about Vincent Van Gogh, and it's like a painting.
I've been hearing about that for it's finally playing.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
We're going to try to watch that for next week because I have a good topic to fit that into. But we wanted to discuss some other films we had recently watched, and God damn it, we're going to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't know, this is a podcast where we discuss movies on the odd episodes like today and topics on the even episodes. Follow us on Facebook at Not Quite Hollywood, Twitter, NQH Pod. Email us for a suggestion for a movie or a topic we could do in the show at notquitepod@gmail.com. And seriously, subscribe on iTunes, rate us, review us, give us a little bump in those little rankings they have on iTunes podcast. God, my brain hurts. So yeah, let's talk about the original. We're going a little sci-fi this episode.
Oh, we might.
Oh, we definitely are. In a heady sci-fi. So the 1982 original Blade Runner. Now,
is this the theatrical cut we're talking about?
Oh, Jesus.
I've actually only seen the final cut.
Yeah. So have I. I was supposed to watch the director's cut for this. I did not. And it's all my fault. That's why Tim's not here. That's why we're recording at 11:20 at night. That's why I didn't get a chance to watch it.
I've seen the director's cut and theatrical cut.
Okay.
My roommate
The final cut.
The final cut.
Yeah. Theatrical cut.
Okay.
The theatrical cut is one that sucks because it has a lot of narration beating you over the head with obvious subtext that they're trying to convey without saying anything, and the director's cut got rid of it, and then the final cut kind of just tweaked some of the visuals
and added some stuff in that hadn't been there before.
Yeah, like the unicorn. Like
I've heard that, at least from my roommate was telling me that, like, the director's cut, which is what he's seen, and the final cut, which he was watching the other day, are not so drastically different. It's just that texturally it's perhaps a more... It like completes some of the details you just hadn't gotten to yet or hadn't included up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think no matter what versions we've seen, we can all still discuss thematically the same film.
And that's Blade Runner. No, I'm just kidding.
That's Blade Runner.
So, Alex, you had only recently seen this?
No. So, I'd seen the theatrical cut like years ago, like in high school. It was good. It wasn't like, oh my God, Blade Runner. And I honestly thought the final fight was a little bit underwhelming when I first saw it, and I think I still stand by that.
Mm.
And so then I was like, well, I have to see it again before the new one. So I went to see the final cut at the Dolby at AMC.
Right.
That was cool, but I was still kind of like, I thought the story was a little bit simple. I thought it's like, okay, he's hunting down these four replicants. That's like the story.
Yeah.
And like the replicant thing is really cool, and it's like, oh, like who's human and who's not. Which that's, I think, the most fascinating part of the movie. But the story itself is not
anything. It's very straightforward noir stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know, I think that simplicity actually helps the film. I think if they had made the plot too convoluted,
it would have been confusing for sure.
It also would have been distracting.
Yeah.
From a film that's so visual.
That's true. I think because it is introducing you to this new... Yeah. world, and they kind of have to make it a simple
thing. Yeah, it's telling the story, it's telling the bigger story through texture, and it's just telling like a very simple detective story with this added layer of complication about like human existence and free will and stuff like that.
I was also very surprised that don't know many movies that like the hero is saved by someone. You remember that part where
he gets beaten up?
He's basically all of gonna the die,
time.
And then
all of the time.
Was it Pris, the prostitute?
Yes, yeah, she kills the guy who's beating him up, and it's like, wow,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
This is the thing.
And that was, I remember, what was it? I was watching some special feature because I saw it in high school when they released the
Blu-ray.
I didn't have a Blu-ray at the time, so yeah. I got the 4-disc DVD, which didn't have the work print version on it, so I've been deprived a version of Blade Runner.
Ouch.
I just ordered I think it's like the 35th anniversary one, the one where they kind of compressed it down to just 3 discs instead of 5.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I just remember, like, it was the biggest thing, and it was coming out. They had, like, the suitcases that you could get, and it was coming out on HD DVD.
Hell yeah.
Blu-ray and DVD, and I walked from my house to the closest Best Buy to buy it, and I'd never seen it before. I actually really didn't know anything about it, but I watched the movie and then immediately watched like every special feature and learned as much as I could. But I think that was a thing that they really wanted to be like that, because that's the thing in noir movies. In noir movies, the hero just gets beat up a lot. That's a thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you know, that's true.
They don't.
He's a hapless loser.
Right, and they really wanted to go for that. They also kind of wanted to have Harrison Ford wear a hat. But he was like, I've been making Indiana Jones movies. I'm not wearing a hat.
Yeah.
So.
Fuck you.
Yeah, but he has a cool coat, so.
It's weird, but I never really thought of it as a noir until you just mentioned it. Because it is sci-fi, and you don't really, like, pair the two together.
Right, but it carries a lot of its, like, kind of darker-looking visuals and stuff like that. Yeah. And
it is not a happy movie.
Yeah.
It is not a happy movie.
So, I did the same thing. I bought the Blu-ray collection, never seen the film. I kept trying to watch it. I watched, like, tried it, like, 3 times, and I stopped it. I was so bored.
Really?
I didn't know what to expect. I knew it was, like, one of the best sci-fi films ever made, and the title and then my preconceived notions of an 80s action sci-fi film were construed by other films that like are a little more faster pace and a little less heady, a little more entertaining. And so when I saw this, I'm like, what's going on? And
yeah,
I always said I'll get back to it. I never did. I finally did a couple of years later. I just had it. I'm like, yeah, why am I not watching this movie?
Right. So you've had that same.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I watched the final cut. And I was just blown away at how poetic every shot composition was. Rutger Hauer, I think he did improvise the ending.
Yes,
completely,
he did.
Which is fucking insane.
Tears in rain.
Yeah. Well, what a fucking powerful line.
Yeah. Just
let alone the speech. Yeah, that film is really cool. It's definitely very slow.
You're talking about the villain, right?
Yeah.
Roy Batty. Roy Batty. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he does an awesome job. I love Rutger Hauer so much. He's so fantastic in that movie. And I think it's because he plays a villain that's simultaneously really terrifying and very sympathetic.
Yeah.
Which I think is a cool thing. But just seeing him crush that dude's head.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah,
still
yeah.
just one of those, like.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
And the final cut extended the gore. His fingers kept going in.
That I didn't know.
I'll link to it in the show notes. There was a video from Looper who said, that Looper YouTube page, who said, which cut of the Blade Runner should you watch? And it shows the differences, albeit very few differences.
Right.
But, you know, one of them is that the gore is more pronounced.
Right, right.
Which is cool. And the color tone is more of a green hue to it in the final cut.
Interesting.
Which is, yeah, really weird.
Okay.
And some of the skies are darker and stuff. There's a lot of small little tweaks.
Okay. I can dig it.
Yeah, like you were saying earlier, it's such a great film about, it's kind of similar in the same tone of Prometheus. Not that it's just Ridley Scott loves this idea, but the fact that, you know, what's our place in the world? When we start playing God, have we lost our humanity?
Right.
Because they treat these replicants like trash, like they're slaves. It's like a way of working around the whole slave motif and just saying, oh, this is a future, so right. It's different. Now, have you ever read this short?
No, I love Philip K. Dick, but I haven't read that one.
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
No, I haven't read that one. Fantastic writer, by the way.
Just I didn't even know it was based on anything.
Yeah. So I want to know how much of that resonates in this story. It must be a similar theme.
I think it's similar enough. Oh, I'm trying to remember. I don't know if the Deckard character, one, I don't know if they share a name, but I think it was more definitive that he might have not been. I could be wrong. I know that was different. I also know that it takes place in San Francisco, not Los Angeles. It's a big location difference.
Weird. Because, I mean, the guy who wrote the screenplay adaptation, Hampton Fancher. I mean, fuck.
Yeah.
Brilliant adaptation, like one of the best you've ever seen. I mean, I know it's a short story, like The Green Mile is really good, and that was a short story and that kind of thing. And
Stand By Me.
Yeah, Stand By Me, same way.
Mm-hmm.
And these films just take the idea and run with it. Cause it's funny because even in the 80s, that same mindset was there, the action piece, right? And it didn't do so well.
No.
Financially.
Which, honestly, I can see why, because you and I both went in with the expectation of, oh, there's an action sci-fi, and we were like, what is this? The first time we watched it, kind of, I mean, you didn't finish it the first time, and I was kind of like underwhelmed the first time. And then I think it just, you need to know what kind of movie it is, you know?
Yeah.
I think because I went in so cold, all I knew was that it was a sci-fi movie. I actually wasn't expecting an action film.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I just recognized noir in the poster, and that's what my brain attached to. Mm-hmm. So I think I might have had a little bit of luck there that I kind of skirted that. So, like, the pacing I was able to deal with just fine, too. I think the biggest thing that surprised me about the movie was how good it looked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that freaks me out. Like, you can still look at Blade Runner and be like, I understand that I'm looking at models, but those don't look like models.
Yeah.
Like, they've really got whatever kind of photography magic that they needed to for that thing to look as amazing as it still does.
It puts all the atmospherics
to shame.
I guess I'm thinking
I don't know why I always think of the prequels, because they showed that kind of city life,
right,
town life and the seedy underbelly of some fucking planet.
Right. I think it's supposed to be Coruscant in episode 2.
Okay, when they go
I think that Blade Runner does that thing so much better than a movie that came out, what, like a decade and a half later? Something like that?
Yeah.
It's such a good-looking movie, and I think that was still so shocking to watch when I was in high school, because I was fine with older sci-fi stuff, but it still holds up. It still looks so good.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And even, like, on the big screen, like, when it first started, like, they had the studio titles, and it was all dated, you know, and, like, the green going back and forth, and I'm like, oh, man, is this going to be like this? And then they opened it with the city, and I was like, oh, my God, this looks great.
Mm. Also, it's crazy that normally I feel that electronic scores are very dated, but the score in Blade Runner like really does feel... It strikes a nice balance between what I think was the almost two synth-heavy scores of the 80s and like classical cinema scores, that you still get a sense of like of how huge the sound is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I think it gets under your skin a little bit in a way that's really good. Like some of the better John Carpenter stuff does.
Oh, God, yeah. It also, the reason why I didn't watch it, because that final edition, I think, came out in 2008, because the final cut was in 2007. Maybe 2007 it came out. Because Blu-ray was still, you said it was an HD DVD, so it probably was 2007.
Yeah, I was still in high school. That had to have been my senior year. I annoyed, I think, a lot of my friends with that movie.
The reason I bring it up is because I was still trying to go through my like movie renaissance. I used to watch a lot of shitty movies, and that's why my 52 pickup became such a thing for me. I watched a lot of movies. Do they hold up? And was I stupid? Just a stupid kid. And I didn't understand or like good movies, like really good movies. Like, there's some that hold up, obviously, but I mean, for the most part,
you watch movies as a kid and they're just movies.
And I wanted to be entertained in some way. Like, it was action-packed or it was funny or you know, something like that.
I can never go back and watch Rockadoodle. I know it'll be disappointing. Animated movie.
Okay.
Elvis Chicken.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
If you remember that one.
I kind of do.
Yeah. That's one of those ones I'm really afraid to go back and revisit.
Huh.
I think my brother owns it on DVD, and I've just never sat down.
Yeah, that's a good call, probably.
Star Kid.
Yeah?
Can't do it.
Yeah. But, so, I was still trying to learn to appreciate these kinds of films, and I guess I was beholden to my old mentality, and it took me a while to get out of it, but it's just one of the most, like, thought-provoking sci-fi films. And I think the films I want to make are, I'm trying to make a mix of sci-fi that is entertaining but also thought-provoking.
Yeah.
I'm just not there yet. It'll take another like 15 drafts before it gets closer to that. Man, I want to talk, it's already been 20 minutes. I cannot believe that a film that came out 35 years later as a sequel is on par with the original film. Of course,
I liked it better.
Okay.
I liked it better too. No, I hate saying that. I like the films about the same level.
It's hard to say.
But I will say that I firmly believe Blade Runner 2049 is a better film.
Yeah.
Overall. Yes. How do you pronounce his name? Is it
Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
I was gonna be like Ryan Gosling.
Harrison Ford. What the fuck? We've known this for years.
I'll just say Denis because I don't want to mispronounce his last name.
Sorry. Yeah.
And be a jerk. But
Villeneuve.
Like that guy that I really like. Villeneuve. You know?
I think that we have our next... And I hate saying this because every time it's said about like an M. Night Shyamalan or something like that, the next like three movies they make are all terrible.
No, you need to say it.
I need to say that I really think he's our like best new director. Like him and Jordan Peele. Like,
I mean, I'd say Rian Johnson's in that camp too.
No, but Rian Johnson's been around.
I know he's been around. But I mean, Denny's been around since 2010.
I think he's made more movies than Rian Johnson has.
Yes.
He has, really.
Yeah. By like a one or two.
Really? Okay. I guess I just don't know.
Incendies was his first one, then Prisoners, and then Sicario, Jake Gyllenhaal, Sicario.
Enemy. That's the one that I was going to make my comedian movie.
Oh, that's what it was. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. Arrival.
Okay. I guess it's been a good slow burn leading to this point. But
he's one of my new favorite directors, though.
Yeah. Arrival. Like this and Arrival have been like some of my favorite movies the past year. I think I'm still... I know I'm touchy about the Academy Awards. I know you guys are to a point too, but I don't like them. But I will say that I think the only Academy Award thing that actually upset me in the last couple of years was that Hacksaw Ridge got the editing award over Arrival.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Arrival is a perfectly timed film. Everything feels so good.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that, I don't know if it's the same editor worked on Blade Runner, but clearly
it is.
He works with them a lot. He has a good sensibility of the right people
thing.
It's amazing that a movie that's as long as it is, it's like what, 240?
240, yeah.
It's 240 and it feels perfect.
Like
I love that.
I saw the first one at 7, and I was falling asleep a little bit.
Yeah.
I saw this one at 11:15 after the trailer started at 11:30 p.m., and I didn't fall asleep until the very end when he's, like, laying down the snow. And it's like, all right, I'm starting to fall asleep a little bit, but, like, you know.
Well, I'm starting to fall asleep during the spoilers, his fucking death.
Well, okay, to be fair, we don't know if he died.
Pretty sure he died.
Like, I watched this video, and it was like, questions we have about Blade Runner 2049. No. Did Ryan Gosling die? And I was did he?
Don't make this an end of Inception thing. No. It can be.
Which is not a bad thing, but yeah, that's pretty cut and dry.
I agree. Yeah, he died.
When you saw Arrival, though, you get it, why he got this film. Because it is the same heady sci-fi. Yeah.
Right.
I was never bored. I thought, like, every shot I was like, Roger Deakins, come over here, please. I was like, oh my God.
Beautiful. You said it. The fact he hasn't gotten an Oscar yet is fucking baffling.
It's so crazy. He's been up like 5 times or something.
The guy's shot some of the most beautiful films in the past 5-10 years, including most of Denny's films.
And the Coen brothers. I mean, he has so many movies that have like won Best Picture, but he just hasn't won Best Cinematography. Like, he did No Country for Old Men.
He shot fucking Skyfall too.
Yeah. Okay. So there was that scene.
Skyfall is I think the best looking James Bond.
Oh yeah. And there was that scene where he's like has that fight on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were having that fight in the projector room, I was thinking, oh, this looks like that scene from Skyfall. And then I looked at him and I was like, it's the same cinematographer. That's why. Didn't know that. That scene in the projector room, I was like, this looks so good. And I heard that Harrison Ford actually punched Ryan Gosling in that scene. And he 99 was so takes mad. And
the 100th time I hit him in the face.
Yeah. And he said he brought him some scotch in his trailer after.
I was so happy with this movie.
It was great. And I'm so mad it didn't make more money. I was like, I don't even care cleaning up after you. Just go see it.
I think good science fiction is often cursed, and the successful ones are few and far between. The fact that Alien and Star Wars have like the huge following they did.
And not even Alien
anymore.
Not
cult followings.
Alien Covenant didn't do that well.
Alien Covenant didn't do that well because of...
Alien Covenant.
Not because of Alien Covenant. I think that... and his vision for... Why am I forgetting the name of the
Prometheus.
Film? Prometheus. We talked about it. I think Prometheus might have killed it a little bit. Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's like Ridley was, here's my Prometheus train, here's my Alien train, smash, smash, smash.
A little bit.
It felt like it was very divisive.
Well, I felt like he was finally getting to the interesting point of what he was trying to do with the questions about humanity in Alien Covenant. And I thought that was weirdly some of the part of its some of the parts of it that worked the best. It was just the weird stuff with the alien that made it weaker. Sorry, I don't want to derail too far.
No, you're right.
But it was almost like he wasn't paying the right attention to the right things, and it makes the film kind of what is otherwise a very strong film just kind of out.
Yeah.
I don't know if that sound gets it.
Janky.
Yeah.
Magoo.
But I do think that Ryan Gosling did a great job. Like, that scene where he freaked out, he was, you know, smashing
the... Oh, yeah.
That was great. A lot of people I heard don't really think he was that good in it. I thought he was great in it.
He was fantastic.
But, yeah. And I mean,
he's good at being stoic. Stoicism is his thing. Like, him in this and Drive, he can
play a guy. I wouldn't say it's his thing. I mean, that's two movies.
No, I mean, he has a knack for it.
Yeah.
That's why he's so great in Place Beyond the Pines.
Which,
that's a movie I don't hear enough people talk about.
That's a great movie.
Yeah.
I just don't think the last half was as good as the first half.
Yeah, maybe, but I like the fact that they carried it to its true conclusion.
But I do think that this will get an awards re-release a little bit, because I do think it'll sweep all the technical awards, and it'll take cinematography, I think.
It's going to win cinematography. It'll
do the Mad Max one, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the cinematography.
It's going to fucking win cinematography. It better fucking win screenplay.
And effects, like with the sex scene with the hands behind his head.
The only reason this isn't going to get editing is because of Baby Driver.
Yeah.
I agree.
If that's okay. If that wins editing, I am all for it.
Yeah.
Please.
Oh yeah, 100%. It doesn't diminish how good, how good and how perfect this movie ended up. But
just the colors of this movie, like it's like the reds and the blues. And the
you know what I think's interesting is that I think that the color palette there, because I'm staring at the Blade Runner 2049 poster because you have it on the wall.
Yep.
Yeah.
The color palette they use for the poster isn't actually representative of what's so good about the color palette in the film.
Yeah.
Well, the blues are so much more subdued and muted, and I love I know it's in the trailer, but just I love the Vegas stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That looks so good. And I don't just mean like when he's outside walking through. I mean, I love the way the inside of that hotel looks. They should get so many production design awards.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think the yellow in the place where Jared Leto lives, his character.
Oh, like God, the lighting and the traveling lights.
Yeah. It looks like water, you know?
Unbelievable. I can't get over the fact that this movie exists.
Yeah.
That is the hardest thing for me to process. I haven't even talked about why I think it's a better film.
Yeah.
Which is just that I think that the real story that they were going for was better, because they managed to do something that Blade Runner just told a simple detective story and had, like, here's some interesting questions to think about. Yeah. Here, we're also given a simple detective story, but the question is so much more complicated and weird, because it really... Ryan Gosling knows he's a replicant.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes it almost like darker and more compelling and weird and like...
But then it's also like, am I also human? Because he's like, am I the kid that I'm looking for? And it's the whole identity thing makes it so interesting.
And I love and was completely heartbroken by his companion.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
That brings up a bigger question. It's like, how much of Joy is programmed? Because is Joy just programmed to feel so real?
Yeah.
Or is Joy
real?
And then Kay has to think about.
Yeah.
Which, you're watching a character process his own reality as he's processing the reality of something that's important to him.
Yeah.
I do like his name also, because it's a letter. Mm-hmm. But it's also like a name. So it's like, is he just a thing or is he like a person?
Yeah.
The only two spoilers I knew going in, because I heard somebody talking before we went, was that Jared Leto's nothing happened with him.
Right.
And also somebody said that something about it reminded her of the movie Her. Mm-hmm. And that his relationship with the thing definitely reminded me of that movie.
I mean, I guess. Yeah, this is definitely the second year in a row where Jared Leto plays a character who's a little odd, has a weird voice, and doesn't do shit in the movie.
Yeah, but he's
so good.
The purpose he serves here, I think, is good. I read someone write this thing about, like, it's perfect because he's a good red herring, but they don't take that all the way.
Yeah.
You know?
And they couldn't have fitted a sequel.
Right.
Which you, I don't know if they should.
I don't think they should either.
No.
I don't think so. I think they could. They could do the war
hell,
thing.
Hell, on some level, Blade Runner 2049 doesn't feel like a sequel to Blade Runner. It just feels like, let's step back in.
Yeah.
You know, it's a more conceptual sequel than it is like a direct sequel, which is so cool to me.
Right.
Did you watch the first one right before the second one?
No, but I have the first one's logged away in my head. Okay. I have like
because like
you I've know, got they, movies like
they
that.
The voiceovers and like since I had seen it the night before, I could like picture the scene where he was saying that thing.
Right. Blade Runner is one of those movies that because of how strong the visuals are, the whole thing's just here. Uh-huh. Like I got that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I linked to this in the show notes too, but there's another Looper video about the ending explained and how he had to give up something about because love and joy are both the females in the film. What I found really fascinating about it is that there's maybe I'll post about this too. This fucking pissed me off. There's some woman reviewer who called it misogyny.
I read that article. I'll say that I read
some
it.
Points.
I actually don't entirely disagree with it.
Yeah.
I think that there is a lot to be said about like it definitely used female characters, but. I thought especially love was so great. And I think that my problem with what she wrote is she almost diminished love too much.
Yeah. And love is a powerful character.
Right. And there's so much more to be said that she's not just Jared Leto's servant. It should, I don't know, like it's complicated. I'm going to have to watch the movie a few more times.
Yeah. She is his eyes, his ears, and his muscle.
And she has to watch him murder.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, every time. Yeah, that scene where she's crying because he killed the other replicant. It's just so sad. And that line. One of my favorite lines she had was when she was talking to Robin Wright before she killed her, and saying that I'll just tell my boss you tried to kill me first, like proving that they can lie.
Right.
Proving that she has ulterior motives and she's doing whatever she has to do to make her purpose fulfilled.
It's about giving into. Giving into purpose and giving into a lack of free will, even though she understands that she has it, which is a horrifying thing.
Yeah, and then that same reviewer is like, oh, Robin Wright's good too. She's a badass as always. She's a fucking great character, and you're not going to talk about it. Like you're just going to gloss over that and make your point a little more stronger.
I feel like I want to read those thoughts because I think this could be said about a lot of things. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
This is an important thing. I think that needs to be with any film theory is that. There's a lot of really good points that are brought up, and I agree with some of it. I don't agree with all of it, but what I would like to see is something big. I don't necessarily want to put that on the person who wrote that original article. What was her name?
Sarah Stewart from the New York Post.
Okay.
No, I get her point. I just think that not everything has to be viewed in that looking glass, in that perspective, because this is a sequel to a film. Yeah, it was written in the 80s, and she mentioned that. But it's also a film about the lack of humanity or trying to figure out what being human really means. And I think there's something to that where there's a... it's a continuation of how we treat others, and in this case, women. We almost do objectify them. That makes it such a dystopian future. Like we're further away from what we want to be. Like we're like down the rabbit hole we're going now. Everybody's so xenophobic towards each other, and then it's only dividing us further. And it's like to the point where that kind of went to the nth degree, and then this movie is a result of that kind of perspective, and we get to do slavery again through these replicants and. There's a lot of things that are part of that kind of film. And I get her point. I just feel like the PC world is so biting against every single thing that's released now, entertainment or otherwise. It's hard to even just traverse the landscape of entertainment without having to deal with this kind of stuff.
I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of more egregious things, but I'm going to phrase it this way. Look. I understand that some people aren't going to are going to criticize me for putting myself down here, but it's just sort of like I am just a straight white dude. Maybe there are things here that I don't understand and should look into more.
Sure.
And that's kind of the healthiest way I'm trying to. Just because I don't agree doesn't mean that these things aren't valid. So it is something to consider.
Yeah.
I still think it was a great film, and I think there are so much more egregious examples, but I don't mean to say that in a way to dismiss this, if you get what I mean. I don't want to just look at someone who's clearly grasping at something very strong and very interesting and kind of push it aside as just reactionary, politically correct stuff, because I don't know, I sort of come from that kind of political background where, you know, like I've definitely been reactionary to stuff, and sometimes sure. It's pretty valid, you know, yeah. And I've been told I've been too politically correct about things, so I don't know.
There was an article about the new Nintendo Switch game in May called ARMS. It was a fighting game, and they had a character called Twin something, and it was a black character because the arms are spring-loaded arms and stuff, and she used her hair, and it's supposed to be like offensive to the black community because of the dreadlocks and that kind of thing. And another a guy I'll follow, Brian Altano, said, yeah, it's kind of weird. I never looked at it that perspective. Like, it's fascinating to me, and I'm trying to understand it now. And I get what she's trying to say.
Yeah.
I just feel as though it does gloss over some of the strong qualities of these female characters.
Right.
In a world that is predominantly male-driven. It's much like a commentary like today's world anyway.
I will say, though, in the case of ARMS, was ARMS a Japanese-developed game?
Yes. Surprise!
Look, when I was in Japan, I definitely saw some stuff that illustrated to me outright that they have like little to no racial sensitivity there. and I don't mean to blanket anything there, too, but it's like, that's really complicated. Here's a fun thing. If you ever want to learn anything about racism in Japan, just learn about the history of ramen noodles.
Huh.
Oh, yeah. Just, I'm going to let people do that on their own. But, yeah, Japan's almost as bad as us about racial sensitivity stuff. Except the difference is that it's at least a country that is far removed from a fair amount of, like wide diversity. That it's like, okay, maybe people just don't know, whereas here it's sort of like, oh no, people know and they just suck anyway.
Yeah.
So my favorite line in the film is when the guy's looking through the files and he's like, oh, I did this as a kid or something. Ryan Gosling looks at him and he says, I bet you were adorable. With this stoic face, and it was so fucking funny. It was amazing. So yeah, on a lighter note.
On a lighter note.
I was a big fan of, a massive fan of the creator of Memories, the female.
Yes. The what?
I don't remember her name.
Actually, we should stop.
The one at the end.
Probably.
Okay.
That might be important if we're going to talk about this.
Dr. Anna Staline. Well, I just don't know these names. Like, they didn't really mention her name.
No.
They had it in like Staline Corporation or on the
something
sign.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so she was such a tragic figure, and the fact that she was like the boy in the plastic bubble, isolated from the world, which I thought was going to be a red herring, but it wasn't.
Right, is that she was just stuck in the thing.
She was like a bubble boy.
Yeah.
It was that she was so good, and this is basically what she says, but that she's the reason why she's the best is because of the fact that she understands that memories are like real memories are imperfect, but beyond that, also that because she wasn't allowed to go out and experience the outside world, she had to essentially create the best memories she could for herself as well as for her work within a confined space. And that's really compelling.
And I like how she says that memories are more about the emotions you feel during that time, not the actual event.
Right. There's some really beautiful commentary on, like, I think there's this problem in people discussing art where they talk about, like, oh, it's like how being tortured makes great art, but at the same time, it's just like being really messed up shouldn't be precursor to create great art. But here we have someone who's, this is like a good example. It's just like sometimes when you can't escape from something and you are absolutely trapped in it, if you have the ability to create beautiful work in order to be able to cope with that, you know, like the kind of meaning that draws out for you.
Yeah.
And that, like, I loved that scene so much. Like, her assembling the birthday cake.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, right.
Is gonna haunt me for a really long time.
Yeah.
Did the twist get you? It got me.
I...
That he wasn't the kid and she was.
I figured that was coming. I told him because it was halfway through the film.
It was as soon as the body double for joy, the prostitute comes in and recognizes the horse. I just went, oh shit. That told me she knows what that is.
Okay.
That means that's just a real memory that she's implanted into Ryan Gosling and other replicants.
I didn't realize she recognized
it. I thought she recognized it from the photo, though, because
no, she said. I think she even says, like, in the dream.
One from the tree. One from the tree.
Oh, the one from the because tree? He told her that story when he had the photo.
Oh, I sworn he. I guess I maybe even misheard what she said. No. And
it's hard. Some of it didn't come through as well.
But I still, just something about the way she looked at that, at least I sort of was just like, oh my God, he's not going to be, like, that's going to hit him so hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is going to be like experiencing a first death.
Yeah.
But they said that.
It was.
Yeah.
Basically.
That Looper video also did say he was the replicant that was used to trick people, throw people off the scent. By giving that him that memory, it was like made it to believe that he was going to be the one, that he was the real offspring.
Especially because they probably knew he was going to be designated as a Blade Runner.
Maybe. Crazy.
You know what? I totally meant to watch those shorts before we recorded this episode.
Shit, I still haven't seen them either.
Yeah, there's three of them.
I've heard they're good.
Yeah, me too. All written by the same guy too. Can we just access them on YouTube like that? It must be,
And people can just find them. You can go find them yourself.
No, they're going to be there.
Okay. So, Jimmy, we'll put them down there for you, okay?
There's also an interview, I think, with Ana de Armas, which I'm in love with.
Yeah.
She's so powerful is what she did, but I also loved her in Knock Knock when I first saw her because she was so twisted. Oh, I still need to see
Knock Knock.
Great film.
Mm.
It's pretty interesting. It's not like... I mean, she's naked in it too. That helps. But
I've seen the monologue, the Keanu Reeves monologue. That's
really bizarre.
Freak out.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves best freak out. My favorite.
2015.
I don't know.
It's definitely one of the best.
I mean, is it as good as his hot dog freak out?
I haven't seen the hot dog freak out.
His hot dog freak out is one of the best things I've seen in any movie ever.
What look movie it up. Is this?
It was in Sweet November.
Oh my God, I've never seen that.
The name of the movie.
Yeah, him and Drew Barrymore?
No, it's not Drew Barrymore.
Charlize Theron.
I don't think it's Charlize Theron. It may be Charlize, but it was he's in San Francisco and he's an ad executive.
Yep. Boom.
It was Charlize Theron? Oh, okay. I saw it on TV and I came in like right before the part where like he's a high-powered ad executive and he's got this ad thing for hot dogs. Does this huge thing. It's like, people need a primitive food. What do they want? A hot dog. And it gets, just as he's pulling down these advertisements, they get progressively more sexual until the point where he just pulls down the last one and just starts screaming over and over again, a hot dog, a hot dog, a hot dog. It's a thing of beauty. Please look this up.
All right, I'm going to put that in the show notes too.
Oh, God. Sweet November, Keanu Reeves, hot dog freak out.
I'll show you the Knock Knock one after the show.
Okay, please. were you talking about, is the same actress who plays Joy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was so great. She's also in War Dogs as Miles Teller's wife.
Oh.
Girlfriend.
By the way, most heartbreaking moment in the movie for you guys.
When she saw the memory, and that's what I was trying to get at earlier, and she started crying, her tears just streaming down her face. It was so powerful to me. Like, I didn't get it until after, but
who?
It was a memory of her life.
She's the memory like,
there's
maker,
always,
yeah.
There's always some of the artists in their work.
Wouldn't she know? Do we think she knew that it was her memory, but she just didn't say anything?
But I don't think she knew about him, though. She was probably just raised to, because that way it was like plausible deniability. You don't know you're this daughter of some miracle child.
Uh-huh. Right.
So she didn't know it was her memory then?
No, she knew it was her memory. She just didn't understand to what end.
Oh, what all that meant.
Right.
What okay. Holy that. Fuck. What if her immune system was compromised because her body is such a weird freak of nature? Like, she didn't have a proper immune system.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So she is a bubble boy.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
She had to. She said she had to be in this bubble or that she couldn't live or something like that.
I thought she said her parents put her in the bubble. So.
Oh, well, then that makes sense.
But that leaves it open-ended, and that's the thing.
Speaking of open-ended, it does leave the whole Deckard replicant or not open-ended, too.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Because either way, either it's human fucking replicant and having a child or two replicants have sex. Because Jared Leto... Wallace said you were programmed to fall in love with her. Like, literally said that. So whether or not that means... It was the way she was programmed to make you infatuated, or he was in programmed for her.
Right. By the way, same question to you. What for you was the most heartbreaking single moment in the film?
Probably the moment where he realizes he's not the one. He was just so sad, and he was sitting at the bar, you know, Harrison Ford is like this grumpy old man, and he's like, he doesn't realize what he just said. They just broke Ryan Gosling's heart, you know?
Yeah, I get that. Mine is just that moment where the giant hologram Joy says, "You look like a good Joe."
Yeah.
Just, I'm not going to actually punch my hand, but it's just that fucking stabbed me in the chest. Like, for me, that comes down to, like, why I think I like this movie more than Blade Runner, at least not like more. Why I think it might be a better film is just it deals with a much uglier and more complicated idea of what it means to be real. And, like, when you make something with artificial intelligence like that, what do those feelings mean, especially when feeling things as an artificially intelligent thing makes you dangerous and a target for being killed.
Yeah. This movie definitely expanded on the things that fascinated me most about the first one that they didn't really touch on much about who's replicant, who's not. Definitely went way into that and like tricked me a few times with twists and things. It was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
It was a pretty dark movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, real fast, transition to this movie, Super Dark Times. Have you heard of it, Dan?
I've heard of it. I have not seen it yet.
So it was only playing at the Lemley NoHo. And so I went to see it, and it was really good. I think it's going to be a Best First Feature nominee for the Spirit Awards this year because it was his first movie. I think he's like 35, the director. And he hit the short that it's based on won the shorts thing at the Cannes Film Festival. So this is a feature version of that. And it was about these teenagers growing up in the 90s, like pre-Columbine, when parents didn't care what you did. You could be like, I'm going out with my friends and whatever. If you watch the trailer, basically these friends are hanging out and one of them accidentally gets killed by another one. And so they're freaking out and they have to cover it up. And lots of movies have done this before.
Right.
You know.
You're not spoiling this, right?
No. This is kind of in the trailer.
They imply it heavily in the trailer.
Basically, they have to figure out what they're going to do and if they're going to tell anyone and all that. And it just all builds so well. And the tension is like, and even though I knew that was coming, that, you know, somebody was going to die. And I literally gasped in the theater. I was like, oh my God.
Like this?
Yes, just like that.
Same pitch.
So brutal. And like the violence is so violent and so like abrupt, you know?
Yeah.
And it was really good. I'm really excited to see where this director goes with his career. Because I could see him doing some like really dark, good stuff with the way he directs the camera and everything.
I'm looking forward to it, actually. Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, so, I wasn't sure when I saw the first trailers, but I trust your opinion. So I heard some rumor we're going to be talking about Hocus Pocus.
No? All right. The rumors are true. My 52 pickup for this week is Hocus Pocus.
It's just a bit of Hocus Pocus. I thought you were gonna drop
some knowledge. Yeah, I watched this a couple years ago. You know, it was my first and only time so far that I've done like the Halloween challenge where I watched a film every day of October that was Halloween or horror related, like you're doing now, Dan.
Yes. Did you almost call me Dave?
I almost did. That's weird.
It's cool.
See, it's starting to fall apart.
He finished his apple juice.
I did. I want some more, but I'm out of rum. Gin. Fuck.
He can't remember what alcohol that he put in his apple juice.
So this film is infamous because my friend and co-host of We Need Movies and also co-host of the podcast Nostalgia Be Damned, he likes Halloween Town better than this film because he had never seen it until 2 years ago.
Wrong. Oh my God.
And he had nostalgia for Halloween Town. And we watched both that year. And Halloween Town is infuriating because of Marnie. And she's one of the most annoying characters, and you're supposed to root for her? Yes, Brandon had a point. Kathy and Jimmy's witch is an idiot. But nevertheless, she wasn't the main character of the film.
Right. But I think that they made three characters. They needed like a Three Stooges thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it is.
It's perfectly valid for one of the characters to just be really dumb. That's not
I think it's just because I was a little older than he was. And maybe he just missed it, but I mean, I think it was definitely a little more darker. Rewatching, I'm like, wow, we're talking about virgins and sacrifices. Oh, yeah.
I remember how many times I saw that movie on the Disney Channel. And even as a kid, sort of thinking, it's like,
what's a virgin?
Well, it's not even the virgin stuff, yes, but also just the zombie stuff.
Yeah.
Like the fingers getting clipped off by the
guy getting run over.
Yeah.
I haven't seen either of these movies.
Speed bump. Beep beep.
I don't know where I was in this time, but I did not watch either of these movies.
I think that Halloween Town is one of those
Disney Channel
original movies that were like fun as a kid. You watch them as an adult, it's like there's nothing wrong with this, but they're okay.
Yeah.
Hocus Pocus, I haven't seen it in a long time, and maybe my memories of it are better, and I guess it's the point of 52 pickup here.
But, yeah, what do you want to say, though?
But what I want to say is that the way I remember it is that, like, I don't understand why that would have gotten all the negative reviews it got, because it's such good campy fun. I mean, the part where they show up to Gary Marshall's house... And he's dressed as the devil, and they just recognize him as the devil.
Yeah.
And just go into his house. He's got a little woman.
Yeah.
Does it still hold up? By the way, is Doug Jones the guy that plays the zombie?
Yes, he does.
Oh, yes.
Billy.
That zombie stuff was way hardcore for me for somebody who's supposed to be like a family movie. But I love when they cut the stitches open, he spits that stuff out.
So I have a question. Did they just announce a remake?
Yes. Not, I don't think officially, but they're talking about it.
I always feel weird about, like, remakes of cult cinema.
Yeah.
Because it's always sort of like, you realize that it's people sort of like it because of things that didn't work about it. Why would you go after that again? I guess, I don't know, I guess Blade Runner counts as a remake of cult cinema.
I was just about to say.
But I feel like Hocus Pocus is a different, it'd be sort of be like, remaking Hocus Pocus would be like remaking Hairspray, which is the thing that they did, except the original Hairspray is a great movie, but you get what I mean, where it's sort of like...
And they have John Travolta.
I feel like remaking Camp... I don't think John Travolta is the... I don't know, but the most I heard about the new Hairspray is that it's like, well, it's kind of based on the musical, and it's fun, but it's fun, and that's as much as you can say about it, really. I feel like remaking Hocus Pocus would be just sort of like... I don't know what you expect to get out of it unless you make like a really great, new, interesting, better movie out of it. I'm always going to leave room for that conceptually.
Is there a Hocus Pocus 2?
No.
No.
Okay.
So I used to hate anachronistic songs and actions from characters. Like, A Knight's Tale drove me fucking insane.
But I've heard that movie's a lot of fun. I've never seen it.
I haven't seen it since, so I probably would enjoy it. But I always was baffled by, like, so all of a sudden these three sisters, the Sanderson sisters from 1693.
No, a Screamin' Jay Hawkins song.
Is that what it is?
I think
is
this so.
Original? I put a spell on you.
I put a spell on you.
Understanding what a fucking microphone is, let alone.
Isn't that a Clearwater?
I think CCR did a cover of it or something.
Yeah.
I'm looking this up. Hold on.
But I mean, the fact that, yeah.
Written by Jay Hawkins, 1956 song.
Yeah. It's not a big deal.
Right. It's just camp.
Yeah. And then flying near the car at the end and exclaiming, "Let me see your driver's license, driver's permit." That's a lot of fucked up right there. The fact that you even know he's too young to have a license is a really weird thing. But I'll tell you one thing I did enjoy, a young Sarah Jessica Parker.
She's great. That made me feel feelings when I was in elementary school.
Yeah.
That was the sexiest thing I got to see was her in that movie.
Yes.
As a child on the Disney Channel. Hi, everyone.
Let me feel you in, Alex. Not that way. I remember feeling excited. It feels
a little dirty talking.
Sure. No, I know. This is really weird. But I remember feeling excited about Sarah Jessica Parker, and I was too young to know why. Now seeing it again, and knowing how suggestive her dialogue was. A virgin, let me play with him.
Yeah.
Then her siren song near the end of The Children, when she was stroking her broom in the sky with her tits out. Come, little children, I'll take thee away. Blah, 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 blah. Sign me up.
Yeah.
I'd go for her.
I know all the words to that other song.
This is Halloween.
No.
I put a spell on you?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. One.
You do?
Yes, yeah.
Go.
Well, it's because you like Creedence, right?
Yeah.
By the way, you guys should listen to the Screamin' Jay Hawkins version. It's amazing.
I've heard that one.
Oh, you've heard that? Okay.
Yeah, that's why I knew it was an older song.
Okay.
I did have a crush on Thora Birch, though.
Mm.
Because she was my age.
Yeah.
And you know how it is. It's weird looking back on it now. Like, I don't get it.
Right.
Thank God I don't get it.
Of course.
I mean, I had pictures of Selena Gomez torn out of TV Guide up on my wall when she was 15 on Wizards of Waverly Place.
Okay,
but yeah, you guys
just took them down like 2 years ago.
Oh,
but not here at my house where I never sleep. It was at that that place.
Yes. You just kind of just forgot about it. I'm just like maybe.
Maybe I should take these sticky down.
Couldn't take them off the wall for so long.
Terrible. It's not man.
The only thing there's some logic in terms of character development, like. Characters make stupid moves and you get mad. It kind of ruins the story and takes you out of it. Like at the end, Winifred simply chooses to go after Danny instead of using one of the myriad of kids who just showed up at their doorstep to at least get their curse broken, and then they can suck anybody's life out, essence out.
Yeah. Oh, didn't think you were going to say that.
Watch the movie.
Another metaphor there for you, Alex. Suck your life. But no, it holds up fairly well. I mean, it's cheesy, like everything else. But
should I watch that or Halloween Town?
You should watch this.
Focus, yeah.
This before I have my pass up. You can probably watch it tomorrow on Amazon.
Should I watch?
Really good.
So this or Beetlejuice?
Oh,
Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Okay.
Beetlejuice is a great film.
But since I already rented this, you might as well watch this now and then watch. I have Beetlejuice in Blu-ray.
Yeah, so, Beetlejuice you can get.
On Blu-ray.
That's watch Hocus Pocus. It's fun. It's fun.
Is Hocus Pocus not available on Blu-ray?
It is. I just don't have it.
Okay. Yeah. They're also, I think, showing it. I think they might be showing it at the what's the El Capitan?
Disney Star. I saw that. Driving by.
I was on Hollywood Boulevard the other day. Which that'd be fun. I'd love to see that movie in the theater.
Let's go, Alex.
I really want to go see Halloween on Halloween. If you guys are down,
I think I want to get one of you in for free. I'm seeing kind of a lot of movies this month because I'm driving back and forth from NorCal. I kind of want I'm already spending enough money.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for 2 paychecks. I hate freelancing.
Yeah, it kind of blows. That's why, I had to push this shit back. But we should wrap up, though. It's 12:30. So you should watch it, Alex.
By the way, I don't mean to say that Hocus Pocus and Hairspray are on the same level. Hairspray is... But you get what I mean.
Yeah, no, I do. Both
camp classics for different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because there are some films that could benefit from a remake that don't really get that kind of following.
Right.
Or, I don't know. I think there's potential there for something cool, but then they're going to fuck it up.
Right. I mean, look, I'm always going to point to A Fistful of Dollars is like, you can remake a film and make a new significant work. Fistful of Dollars and Yojimbo are the exact same movie. Just one's a Western, one was a Japanese samurai film. This is a Japanese samurai film was first. They're both great pieces of cinema. Same plot. A lot of the same stuff goes on almost to the letter, but I still view them as distinct, separate artistic visions.
Sure.
If you have a good idea and you think you can do it, it's worth trying, maybe even worth failing. But Hocus Pocus?
I
feel like it's like, why? I don't know. People like it because it was this corny thing they remember from when they were kids.
And Disney likes it because, it's a franchise that people know. There's a cult following. I can use a name to make money.
I'm not gonna blame Disney for that. I don't know.
I mean, like, wouldn't you?
Yeah, probably. Not to sound cynical, but it's like, I don't know what, it's worth a shot.
Yeah.
Hey, what if it's good?
Speaking of what if it's good, you should be liking this podcast because what if it's good one day? I mean, think about it.
I think
one
it's day. Good now, you guys.
One day.
As it's sponsored. By a Dollar Shave Club.
As you're sometimes guest and sometimes Odyssey listener, video. I think this is a fantastic podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Dollar Shave Club, you should sponsor us, even though none of us shave because we all have beards right now.
Yeah. By the way, I said this off podcast, but I'm going to say it on podcast. Jamie's beard looks pretty dope.
You said that?
I didn't say that your beard looks dope in those words, but I was saying, you'd walked out of the room. I was telling Alex how, like, your beard was awesome. Looks good.
I almost shaved it the other day.
Don't.
Because it's just so fucking curly and it's unkempt. I can't control it.
Mine is the same way, if you can't tell.
It's straightened out. Do you use a comb?
It's I can't get a comb through there. It's like, it's really tangled.
But I heard it helps with the oils if you comb
maybe,
it.
And I know you're supposed to use beard oil and stuff like that.
That's too much work.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. It does feel really nice, but
I feel like this is a thing, like, I
don't groom, which is why I have a beard. Also, I don't have a chin, and I feel uncomfortable about that. So
you don't have a chin.
I don't really have much of a chin.
Your chin's there now.
It's very slight.
Because your beard is there.
Because my beard is there. It makes me have defined face.
Sleight of Chin is like a new sequel.
No,
to like
Sleight.
Sleight.
It's about a chin thief.
It's a shitty poker game.
Oh my god.
I suddenly want to make a horror film where that's the. It's chins. A slasher.
With no money, where it's about a dude just cutting off people's chins.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. We're all for it. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone throws $25 into the pot. That's our budget.
And the way we ran
yep.
it.
Yeah. This has been episode 79. Not quite Hollywood. It's a good time. I think it's fell towards more of the latter where it's fun, not weird.
I've decided to extend the giveaway through, I want to say October, but let's just do this episode for now. We're extending the giveaway for another week. Because happy Halloween, people. Mm. Email us and get your copy of Get Out, downloadable version Ooh. Of Get Out. So, unfortunately, you can't win.
Still Dan, my favorite movie of the year. I know.
But if you really? Weren't on the show, you can yeah, email still. Us.
Even
Blade after, Runner. Of course.
Oh,
No. Look.
I get it.
That's not, it's nothing against Blade Runner.
No, I
know. I just know in my heart of hearts, Get Out is my favorite film of the year, still.
So, yeah, email us and win a digital copy of Dan's favorite film of 2017 so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, fuck you guys.
Yeah?
Why?
I meant the listeners. Fuck you guys.
Oh, okay.
Email us. Let's say there's a movie out there that is so bizarre. It's one of the things you grew up watching. You want us to watch it and see what we think. You can do that. Email us.
Any movie.
And hopefully we can track it down. Like I said, if it takes a while to track down, maybe it'll be a couple weeks from the point when you offer it. But or a topic. I mean, God, if you want us to talk about Britney Spears movies... We'll fucking talk about him.
Like, oh, what was that?
I'll do my due diligence. Crossroads?
Yeah.
I watched it in theaters.
Crossroads. What is that?
I watched everything in theaters.
Oh, it was Britney Spears' movie.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I thought you were making that up.
No, I'm serious. She's been in a couple movies. Not a lot, but enough to. Well, Austin Powers 3 too, as well.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Best thing she's done.
But yeah, even if you like really hate us and you want to watch this terrible movie, email us. We'll watch it, you know?
Yeah, if you like torturing us because you hate us or our voices or our faces, yeah.
Well,
that's weird because you hooked this up.
I'm going to throw this out there. It is the month of Halloween. You guys should watch Teen Witch.
Oh my God, the rap alone.
You should watch the entire movie because the entire movie is fucking insane.
Sounds good.
I'll lend you my copy.
Oh, you have it?
That's even better. Of course I own that movie.
Maybe Dan will recommend the next one for us. That would be episode 26. We could watch that and talk about it.
I'll probably be out of town, but I'll just lend you guys the movie, and then you'll all really hate me for it.
Sounds good. Top that. If you want to email us, do it. If you
or
don't,
Facebook
or Twitter works too. Give us a review on iTunes. I hope we didn't offend you just now. And because we like to have a little higher of a ranking on iTunes, we're getting some subscribers.
And we're also on Stitcher, right?
Stitcher as well, yeah. And my blog, guyandwire.com, where you can see our entire backlog of all 80 episodes. And my cancer story. And Guy on the Wire is also my Instagram and Twitter as well. Where can we find you guys?
First of all, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your mom, tell your grandma, tell your aunt, tell your uncle, tell your cousins to... listen to this podcast.
Ooh.
And dog on movie reviews. And Instagram at me and my blazer. And you can message me there. I clearly can't talk. You can DM me, as the kids say.
Dick message.
Hey, yo. Don't send me any dick messages. Hi.
I'm Dan.
Hi, I'm Dan. No, I'm on Instagram at seduction_hour. I mostly take pictures of stuff. I'm not... I you're not going to see my selfie game. I don't take or post a lot of selfies. And then also, it's been a bit since we put up an episode. There's still 44 minutes on iTunes and Stitcher, which is a podcast that I do with my friend Kevin about records. It's been a while, but still great backlog of episodes for you to check out. Yeah, that's about it. Don't look for me anywhere else on social media.
Until next time, I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Dan visiting.
Bye.